civic media on those platforms. And Jane is going to continue to do her show from 10 o'clock onward. You can also get some updates on national news as well. For the broadcast network and other streams, we are going to carry the special report for you live. Again, awaiting presidential remarks from President Joe Biden. We've been, of course, with you the last couple of days from our election headquarters here, Wisconsin Decides 2024. As the Electoral College stands now, and of course in America, that's how we choose a president. Interesting to note, though, that Donald Trump not only has won the Electoral College decisively, he also won the popular vote. But a lot of talk in recent elections about should we elect a president via Electoral College or should we elect them through popular vote. In this election in 2024, it would not have mattered, as Donald Trump won both the popular vote and the Electoral College. As it stands right now, with two states to be called, Nevada and Arizona are the two states where they are continuing to count ballots. Right now, Donald Trump has 295 electoral votes to Kamala Harris's 226. And of course, it takes 270 to win, as they say. Ironically, or maybe not so ironically, just like in 2016, it was the state of Wisconsin, our own Badger state, that was called early yesterday morning, which put Trump over that 270 electoral vote mark. And of course, it was Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, all three so-called blue wall states that were flipped from Trump to Biden in 20, were flipped again a couple of days ago from Biden to back to Trump in Trump's column. Again, yesterday, we heard from the Vice President, Kamala Harris, from Washington, D.C. She spoke there, and she gave her thoughts on the transition and peaceful transition of power. The great Sam Davidson, our producer here for this segment, I believe we have those clips for you. So here is the Vice President, Kamala Harris, yesterday on this transition.
Now, I know folks are feeling and experiencing a range of emotions right now. I get it. But we must accept the results of this election. Earlier today, I spoke with President-elect Trump and congratulated him on his victory. I also told him that we will help him and his team with their transition and that we will engage in a peaceful transfer of power. A fundamental principle of American democracy is that when we lose an election, we accept the results. That principle, as much as any other, distinguishes democracy from monarchy or tyranny. And anyone who seeks the public trust must honor it. At the same time, in our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign. The fight for freedom, for opportunity, for fairness, and the dignity of all people. A fight for the ideals at the heart of our nation, the ideals that reflect America at our best. That is a fight I will never give up.
Vice President Kamala Harris yesterday from Howard University in Washington, D.C., on her first remarks there after losing the election to Donald Trump. Again, Harris currently has 226 electoral votes to Donald Trump's 295, with Nevada and Arizona still yet to be counted. We are awaiting the remarks of current President Joe Biden from the White House, from the Rose Garden. He is expected to come out at any moment and address the nation on the results of the election. Possibly on the words of the vice president yesterday, and also on the transition. For those, again, awaiting Jane Matinera of Matinera On Air. You can find her on all of the streaming platforms on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, which is now X, at Civic Media's pages there. We will give you the president's comments live here in just a few moments. I think it's important to remember that what is transpiring or transpired yesterday with Vice President Harris there, and also what is about to transpire today with President Biden, is something that was not afforded to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris 4 years ago. Donald Trump, of course, refused to accept those election results in 2020. In fact, to this day, he continues to deny the truth of 2020. And he did not invite Joe Biden to come to the White House. He did not call and concede the election. He certainly didn't have a press conference saying that he would work on the transition. In fact, as recently as last week, he said, declared at one of his rallies that he was sorry that he did not leave the White House, or that, rather, that he is sorry that he left the White House after the election of 2020. Juxtapose that to what has happened this week. Vice President Harris has accepted the election results. She has called Donald Trump. She has conceded. She has wished him well. And yesterday there was another phone call from current President Biden to Trump, congratulating him, accepting the election results, inviting him back to the White House before he is sworn in, and said that the, both Harris and Biden, that they will work with President-elect Trump on the transition. And as much as that may anger some folks in terms of not wanting to kind of in their heart accept these results, it's important for democracy there, as the vice president just said. We're going to play one more remark. If you haven't, stay up there. I think you're ready. And we're going to play one more of Vice President Harris's remarks. If we see Sam's doing a great job, if we see President Biden coming to the dais, we will cut into that and go right to the current president. But here is Vice President Harris yesterday in her remarks at Howard University.
The outcome of this election is not what we wanted, not what we fought for, not what we voted for. But hear me when I say, the light of America's promise will always burn bright. As long as we never give up, and as long as we keep fighting.
Vice President Harris yesterday at her remarks at Howard University in Washington, D.C., after conceding the election to Donald Trump. Again, important for democracy. I think it was nuanced. It was a great speech, in my opinion, by the vice president to say, look, I'm accepting the results of this election, but I'm not conceding the principles on which we ran. Important difference there, I should say. Important to her supporters, people who voted for her, important to those who disagree with Donald Trump as well. And Sam, I just sent you a cut there of Trump. We'll take it, whatever. You let me know when you're ready to go with that one, because we're going to juxtapose what Harris said yesterday with what former President Donald Trump said on the night of the election when he went to the microphone. This is Donald Trump on election night.
We're going to have a great 4 years, and we're going to turn our country around, make it something very special. It lost that little thing called special. We have to make it so. We're going to make this so great. It's the greatest country, and potentially the greatest country in the world by far. And right now, we're going to just work very hard to get all of that back.
Donald Trump on election night, a more subdued Donald Trump, I will say, than the last few days of the campaign trail, where he broke out some of the most hateful, hurtful, dark rhetoric of the election cycle. And by reports of people who were in the room when Harris called Trump to congratulate him and accept the election results yesterday, apparently, according to reports of those who were in the room, Trump was actually kind, deferential, calling Harris a worthy opponent. We'll see. I hope for the good of the country anyway, that Trump will be good to his word. We'll talk more about that on our show coming up from noon until 2 today. Again, if you're tuning in expecting to hear Jane Matinere and Greg Bach of Matinere on air, you can still hear them. They are streaming their show as per usual on Facebook, Twitter, which is now X, YouTube. You go to the Civic Media channels for that. Also go to civicmedia.us, civicmedia.us, and find those shows that Matinere on air streaming right now. And we will rejoin Matinere on air across the broadcast network here across Wisconsin as soon as we hear from President Joe Biden, who we anticipate will be coming to the dais soon. Actually, it's in a way, it's a little bit humorous to me, a little bit entertaining. Joe Biden, not always known for being on time, especially on the campaign trail. You know, we get these press announcements saying, oh, you know, he's going to speak at 5 o'clock, 6:35. Here he comes. He's not somebody that necessarily looks at the clock and says, I'm going to stick to that. He's somebody who lives in the moment. He's going to talk to people. So in this, one of his final addresses, we'll see. We expect usually what happens is a precedent. And again, this is something precedent was broken in the Trump era. Normally, a president, an outgoing president, will give a final address to the nation a week or two before the transition of power on January 20th. That did not happen in 2020. Donald Trump never gave an address to the nation on the way out, never wished incoming president-elect then Joe Biden well. Because he kept denying the election, denying the election results. And so it's refreshing to see this return to transfer normal transfer of power, at least on the Biden and Harris end. And Donald Trump, of course, he's, you know, in a good mood, right? He won. So far, in the first couple of days here, after this presidential election, we have normalcy returning to the transition of power. There are reports this morning that Trump has already begun his transition team, and that may be anything but normal. Again, Robert Kennedy Jr., who apparently, by all accounts, is well on his way to becoming Secretary of Health and Human Services, is already talking about eliminating fluoride in our water system, returning kids back to cavities, already talking about getting rid of vaccines, already talking about eliminating departments in the U.S. Department of the Food and Drug Administration. And of course, these were all parts of Project 2025, which the Trump administration vehemently, or the Trump campaign team vehemently denied they had any knowledge of. Denied that they had any part of. And here already, 2 days after the election, the Trump transition team apparently already implementing parts of Project 2025. We are awaiting the words of President Joe Biden on the election and on the transition. Live from the White House at the Rose Garden, we have our cameras, our audio ready, trained on the podium there in the Rose Garden. As soon as he comes to the dais, we will bring you these comments and these words to you. And again, Jane Matinere, Matinere on Air, streaming live on all the platforms of Civic Media, YouTube, Twitter, which is now X, Facebook. You can hear Jane right now live on that show. We will return to Matinere on Air across the broadcast network here at Civic Media as soon as President Biden's comments wrap up. While we're waiting, let's take a look back at some of these election results for you from our election desk, Wisconsin Decides 2024. Again, nationally right now, the Electoral College stands at 295 for Donald Trump and 226 for Vice President Kamala Harris. Two states remain right now to be count or to be try that again, Todd. Two remain to be projected winners. Nevada, with its 6 electoral counts, 92% of the votes are counted last time we checked. And Donald Trump is leading 51% to Harris's 47%. If you zoom in and look, Las Vegas, of course, has the largest vote totals. 94% of votes are in Las Vegas County, where Las Vegas is. Pardon me, Clark County, where Las Vegas is. And Harris leads Trump 50 to 48% with 94% of the votes counted. Again, to this observer, at least, slightly surprising. There is a large number of Latinos who work in the Las Vegas economy. And it was thought by many that after the Madison Square Garden rally in New York, week before the election, a lot of anti-Latino rhetoric, hateful rhetoric towards Latinos. And it was thought that many Latinos would swing towards Vice President Harris. Turned out from exit poll data so far that Trump actually gained in Latino voters versus 2020. And in Las Vegas, while Harris leads right now 50 to 48%, that is not an overwhelming lead. All other counties, by the way, in Las Vegas, Trump is ahead. And not by a small margin. So it would appear, keyword appear, that Las Vegas, or pardon me, that Nevada could very well go into the Trump column once it is declared. Let's move down to Arizona. Again, we are awaiting word right now, or awaiting the comments of President Joe Biden from the Rose Garden. He is expected to talk about the election results and about the transition. We're going to bring that to you live, and we're going to rejoin Jane McNair. Matt Nair on air as soon as we are done with these comments from Joe Biden. You can hear Jane right now along with Greg Bach on all of our streaming platforms. Go to Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, which is now X, YouTube, or go to civicmedia.us to hear Jane and Greg of Matt Nair on air right now. We will rejoin that program as soon as we hear from President Biden. Continuing to look at our Wisconsin Decides 2024 election desk results, the two states that have yet to be counted nationally for president, Nevada and Arizona. Let's look at Arizona. The one big place, the one county that President Harris is winning there is Pima County, which is where Tucson is at. Vice President leads 58 to 41%. Big win or big a lead there. Only 66% of the votes, though, are in Pima County. She's expected, though, to continue to win there. Let's look at the other big county, Maricopa County, where Phoenix is at. Was thought the vice president had to do well, at least be competitive there. She's competitive. Trump leads 51 to 48%, 73% of the votes in there in Maricopa County. Of course, Gallego ended up beating Kerry Lake for the U.S. Senate seat in Arizona. Gallego, the Democrat. But there seems to be a lot of split ticket voting. We talked about this on many of our shows, many of our platforms here in Civic Media. One of them by former boss Scott Kluge on Lost in the Middle. You can hear it every Saturday afternoon. Talked about states and areas where you have these ticket splitters. We saw it in Wisconsin a couple of years ago when Tony Evers was up for election for governor, a Democrat, and U.S. Senator Ron Johnson was up for election as a Republican. Evers and Johnson both won. So you have these ticket splitters. And then where do those folks go that split their tickets in larger elections? In Wisconsin, although many we have to wait to see the final tabulations, what we see thus far in Wisconsin is many of those Evers-Johnson ticket splitters ended up being Trump-Baldwin ticket splitters in this election. What's going to happen in Arizona, in Phoenix? We shall see. But right now, as we said, Donald Trump is leading the vote in Arizona. We'll have to see whether all that falls out in the end. Right now, 71% of the votes on total to Arizona, 92% of the votes on total in Nevada. You would expect at this point, most likely Trump will win Nevada. We'll see what happens in Arizona. We are awaiting the word of President Joe Biden. From the Rose Garden at the White House, he is expected to address the nation shortly. President Biden's definition of shortly is very odd. Well, I'll say that. We'll see. He'll be here soon. He's putting on the shades, putting on the aviators, having an ice cream cone. We'll be at the dais soon. Going to speak on the election. Going to speak on the transition of power. We are awaiting word of the president at this hour. And again, very significant. Why? Because this was not something that was afforded to President Biden and then Vice President-elect Harris 4 years ago. Trump refused to accept the election results. He refused to congratulate President Biden, or then President-elect Biden. He refused to invite Biden to the White House. He refused to participate in any sort of a transition. And here now, as recently as yesterday, the day after the election, both President Biden and Vice President Harris called now President-elect Donald Trump to congratulate him, to say they will work with the President-elect in helping him transition back into the White House. That's normalcy returning. What I think a lot of folks are concerned about is, unlike the last time he got into the White House in 2016, this time Trump knows what he's doing to a certain degree. And this time, by all reports, instead of bringing people in who have had experience in federal government to some degree, who knows how things operate normally, Trump is following through, if you believe reports, and so far we believe them. He's bringing people in like Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr., who by all accounts is going to be Secretary of Health and Human Services and has already said yesterday he wants to eliminate fluoride in our water, wants to close down departments in the Food and Drug Administration. Other members of the transition team include Don Jr., the president's eldest son, and Eric, younger son of the president, president-elect. For some people, that's a big concern. For some people, having this larger so-called shakeup of the federal government is of great concern about what is yet to come. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the Trump transition team continues to take pages out of Project 2025, which was written by the Heritage Foundation and also by former members of Trump's own staff. The Trump campaign and Trump himself denied that he was going to use the Project 2025 document to transition and to build his second administration, should he get one. And now here we are. He has gotten a second administration. Again, important to note, Donald Trump did not just win the Electoral College. So far, 295 electoral votes. We expect that to exceed 300 by the time it's all said and done. But very important to remember that Donald Trump thus far has received 72 million plus votes, 50.9% of the total vote so far, to Kamala Harris's 68 million plus, 47% of the total electorate. Donald Trump has won the popular vote, and Donald Trump has won the Electoral College vote. And there are certain conversations, I'll call them, on different social media platforms of some Democrats calling foul because there appears, again, these numbers and statistics are still being tabulated. We have to be careful until everything is done and over. It would appear that there were about 15 to 20 million Democratic voters who either stayed home, didn't vote, or voted third party. Some people on the Democratic side say that makes it quote unquote fishy or suspicious. I am not one of those people. I think it's going to be interesting as we move forward to see what was the cause of that. Are these folks who felt strongly about what's happening in Gaza and Palestine? Are these Jill Stein voters? Are these people who were just not satisfied still with having a choice between Harris and Trump? And these are Democratic voters. Why did they stay home? Why did they vote third party? We won't know. We'll never know exactly. We can only speculate. If they had participated and voted for President Harris, she may well have won the blue wall of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, like Joe Biden did. And so now what's curious to me is those 15 to 20 million Democratic voters who stayed home or voted third party because they felt on a certain issue, The result is you have Donald Trump going to the White House. Speaking of, we're going to go to the White House now. In fact, President Biden is removing his aviators. He's coming to the dais dressed in a natty blue suit. Here is the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Please. Thank you. Good to see this cabinet and staff together here. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Please. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's good to see you all. Particularly good to see my granddaughter sitting in the front row here. Hi, Finn. How are you, honey? For over 200 years, America has carried on the greatest experiment in self-government in the history of the world. And that's not hyperbole. That's a fact. We're the people. The people vote and choose their own leaders, and they do it peacefully. And we're in a democracy. The will of the people always prevails. Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him that I'd direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition. That's what the American people deserve. Yesterday, I also spoke with Vice President Harris. She's been a partner and a public servant. She ran an inspiring campaign, and everyone got to see something that I learned early on to respect so much, her character. She has a backbone like a ramrod. She has great character, true character. She gave her whole heart and effort, and she and her entire team should be proud of the campaign they ran. You know, the struggle for the soul of America, since our very founding, has always been an ongoing debate and still vital today. I know for some people, it's a time for victory, to state the obvious. For others, it's a time of loss. Campaigns are contests of competing visions. The country chooses one or the other. We accept the choice the country made. I've said many times, you can't love your country only when you win. You can't love your neighbor only when you agree. Something I hope we can do, no matter who you voted for, is see each other not as adversaries, but as fellow Americans. Bring down the temperature. I also hope we can lay to rest the question about the integrity of the American electoral system. It is honest, it is fair, and it is transparent. And it can be trusted, win or lose. I also hope we can restore the respect for all our election workers who busted their necks and took risks at the outset. We should thank them. Thank them for staffing voting sites, counting the votes, and protecting the very integrity of the election. Many of them are volunteers who do it simply out of love for their country. And as they did their duty as citizens, I will do my duty as president. I'll fulfill my oath, and I will honor the Constitution. On January 20th, we'll have a peaceful transfer of power here in America. To all our incredible staff, supporters, cabinet members, all the people who have been hanging out with me for the last 4 years, God love you, as my mother would say, thank you so much. You put so much into the past 4 years. I know it's a difficult time. You're hurting. I hear you and I see you. But don't forget. Don't forget all that we accomplished. It's been a historic presidency. Not because I'm president, because what we've done, what you've done. A presidency for all Americans. Much of the work we've done is already being felt by the American people, but the vast majority of it will not be felt. We felt over the next 10 years. We have legislation we passed that's just only now just really kicking in. We're going to see over $1 trillion worth of infrastructure work done, changing people's lives in rural communities and communities that are in real difficulty because it takes time to get it done. And so much more, it's going to take time, but it's there. The road ahead is clear, assuming we sustain it. There's so much we can get done. and will get done based on the way the legislation was passed. And it's truly historic. You know, we're leaving behind the strongest economy in the world. I know people are still hurting, but things are changing rapidly. Together, we've changed America for the better. Now we have 74 days to finish the term, our term. Let's make every day count. That's the responsibility we have to the American people. Look, folks, you all know it in your lives. Setbacks are unavoidable, but giving up is unforgivable. Setbacks are unavoidable, but giving up is unforgivable. We all get knocked down. But the measure of our character, as my dad would say, is how quickly we get back up. Remember, a defeat does not mean we are defeated. We lost this battle. The America of your dreams is calling for you to get back up. That's the story of America for over 240 years and counting. It's a story for all of us, not just some of us. The American experiment endures. We're going to be okay, but we need to stay engaged. We need to keep going. And above all, we need to keep the faith. I'm so proud to have worked with all of you. I really mean it. I sincerely mean it. God bless you all. God bless America. And may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
President Joe Biden and the Rose Garden in the White House there in Washington, D.C. This is a Civic Media News special report. The president there. To recap just a couple of his remarks as he, as you watch him now, just going back into the White House, turning around, waving to people, has his aviators back in hand. Thanking his granddaughter in particular, his staff, his cabinet were all there in the Rose Garden. A couple of key lines from the president's remarks today saying, you can't love your country only when you win. Also says he wants to, that he hopes that this election and the acceptance of it by he and Vice President Harris, quote, lays to rest the questions of integrity in the American political process, an electoral process, pardon me. Thank the electoral workers all around the country. Saying, you know what, we have 70 some odd days left. Let's make every day count. And I thought perhaps his best line in those brief remarks was, quote, setbacks are inevitable, but giving up is unforgivable, unquote. And then the President of the United States reminding Americans that the American experiment endures. Much more on all of our shows here, Jane, Matt, and Air, which many of our stations are going to rejoin Matt and Air on air for our Madison station, WMDX. The Stephanie Miller Show continues. I will be with you across the network from noon until 2, and our other network talkers as well will be talking about these remarks. And stay tuned to Civic Media News. We'll cover all of this as well. For now, for Sam Davidson, for Corey Hartman, and our entire team here, I'm Todd Allball. This has been a Civic Media News special report.
Thanks to our members of the United States military, past and present, who've defended our freedom. This message made possible by C. McPhee. Ready to sell your home? List with Chris McFetridge. It's that simple. Call C. McPhee Realty, 920-642-09.
Can you guys hear me?
Be quiet.
I think the 19th Amendment should be repealed.
Hashtag me too. All you have to do is publicly execute a few women who have lied.
What? Let's dissuade women from reporting rapes by putting them to death.
Only a few women. Preferably the really loud ones.
With hey, makeup. Do I rate?
You absolutely, I was going to get there.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media's own Stuart J. Waddles, who we'll talk movies with, and he'll help make our popcorn pick of the week. Then Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller joins the fun.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach,
Sweet Gal B on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park here in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. After the 11 o'clock news, we're turning things around a little bit next hour. Paul Noonan will be here from the Acme Packing Company. We'll talk a little bit about sports. Things are not going well.
No.
For a couple of sports teams. Brittany Merlot will be here with Weather and Wine. We're going to wrap up the show next hour from 11:30 to 12 with Joseph Pecky, political consultant, with some more takeaways from the results of Tuesday's election. Right now, we are being joined by Tanya Atkinson with Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Good morning, Tanya. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Jay. Nice to see you.
Well, not the results that many of us were hoping for.
Yes.
After Tuesday.
So true.
I find it really interesting, Tanya, though, that there were protections put into place in some states protecting abortion and making abortion part of the state law, that women can get the health care they need. I think that passed in like 8 different states on Tuesday. And yet those states still went for Donald Trump.
Yes, yes, that is. We've been seeing that cross-voting, you know, across the country. And, you know, it's, you know, we've seen when abortion is on the ballot, abortion does win. And even in Florida, I understand, you know, they needed a 60% threshold, but the 57%,
yeah,
right, is still a very, it's, you know, it's very high number. So it's clear that the vast majority of Americans absolutely support abortion access, even if their own personal opinions might differ, understand the need for it to be accessible and safe. And it is definitely a question we're getting a lot. How are people voting for abortion access? And a candidate who has been clear, not only, you know, orchestrated the overturning of Roe, but clearly the agenda of Trump and his allies is to advance a national abortion ban.
How would that work, Tanya? If states have already enshrined this in their own constitution, is a federal ban going to override that?
Yes, the federal law. Yeah, a federal law would override state law.
What happened to states' rights? I thought it was all about sending it back to the states and states' rights. That was the entire argument that we heard after the overturn of when Dobbs fell.
Yeah, I can't speak for why they're using that messaging, but it's clear. I mean, they've put it in writing. They've already attempted, you know, to introduce bans. And so it's very clear that there is an interest in a national abortion ban. They're advocating for a national abortion ban, and as well as if we look at Project 2025, contraception and IVF, you know, a lot of the things that are just really about making our own basic healthcare decisions and our own bodily autonomy.
What are you hearing from people? Are you getting a lot of panicked phone calls?
We are. You know, people are very concerned. I mean, you know, and they're concerned about a lot of things. They're concerned about what healthcare they might be able to access. That's absolutely a concern. Certainly concerned about, you know, abortion bans. And also, you know, people can, you know, see the writing on the wall. They are concerned about what contraceptives they might be able to access. I've had some personal conversations with people who have said that they, you know, they or a member of their family, you know, want to, you know, have an IUD or another longer acting contraceptive, as a result of this election. So there is fear out there. And also, you know, there is fear, in different communities because of the hate that was stoked during the election. The transgender individuals that I've spoken with, extremely concerned about their safety.
That's one thing I think that is important, Tanya, to encourage folks to continue to step up and defend our LGBTQ plus brothers and sisters, anyone who is marginalized.
Yeah.
I think it is even more incumbent on us now, more incumbent now than ever, to make sure that if we see someone mistreating someone, that we need to step up and say something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really would encourage your listeners, just truly to check in on your friends, just reach out and ask how they're doing. The impact of this election has been profound. And even I've been a little surprised, to be quite candid. I mean, you know, about the just the incredible impact it's had on, you know, really people of all identities.
Tanya, one of the things for me is the Eric Hovde campaign towards the last month really used trans youth as a sounding board to get people scared and to get them on his side. And it made me so angry for so many different reasons. But now that the campaign is over, I guarantee you trans youth will not be anything they're worried about at this point. They use those young kids to scare voters with lies. And now because that purpose is done, the campaign's finished, they can just be like, all right, we're going to go on other things. And yet now these trans kids are exposed to so much more attention and possible hate and whatnot. And it breaks my heart and makes me so mad.
Yeah. Yes, same, really. And, you know, what those ads and that rhetoric does is it really gives tacit approval for people to really treat other people very differently. And, you know, to, you know, perpetuate that hate and the misinformation and, you know, and these are kids.
They're kids.
Yeah. Tanya Atkinson is our guest. She's with Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. There are going to be long-term ramifications from this election, certainly as far as women's reproductive health goes. I think all of our health is something that we're going to have to keep an eye on, especially if they're going to follow through with what they said on getting rid of Obamacare, also known as the Affordable Care Act. But I think it's important that while we still have agency, we take advantage of that. And as you said, Tanya, self-care right now is really important. And I think we got to pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and get back to work and stay focused is a valid argument. At the same time, I think there's nothing wrong with taking a break and going in a dark room and closing your eyes and getting away from it. Mm-hmm. Whatever you need to do to be good to yourself, because I think it's a mistake not to feel the feelings that so many people are going through.
Yeah, I
absolutely agree. And I think it's to give yourself grace, whatever those feelings are, yeah, and to feel the feelings, to rest and recharge for the revolution. I mean, we still need each other and we still absolutely have to go forward. And in order to do that, we have to acknowledge how we're feeling and support each other. And then, yeah, the fight isn't over, and it, you know, those emotions can be fuel, and we can really push forward and make sure that we are doing everything in our power, what we have control over, to advance, not just reproductive rights and health, right, but the full range of, not just healthcare even, but those rights related to bodily autonomy, you know, to people's quality of life. We have to work together to move those rights forward. And it's very clear the people of Wisconsin, you know, time and again have made it very clear that they are supportive of abortion access. They want to make sure that abortion access is here in Wisconsin, that access to contraceptives are available. If the Affordable Care Act is overturned, then that is one way of getting at contraceptives, because right now they're covered under the Affordable Care Act. So it's really critical that we also think about what happened in Wisconsin. Gerrymandering was ended. 10 new progressive assembly representatives, 4 new progressive senators, state senators. So it's you know, when the loss at the presidential level is so profound and so personal, it is hard to see also that Wisconsinites sent U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin back, Representative Gwen Moore, Representative Mark Pocan, and as a result of ending gerrymandering, really set up our legislature for becoming a progressive legislature in 2026. So there is, and even in that, while it's still not a majority, there's certainly more opportunities there than there were before, because of the end of gerrymandering and because there's more champions in our legislative body. So those of us in Wisconsin have to sit in both places, and recognize that we have an opportunity and a responsibility to maximize what the people of Wisconsin did at the state level.
That's a really important point, Tanya. It really is. And as you said, and that's kind of what we tried to focus on yesterday in the days that I think I was in, certainly getting the results that I was not expecting. But we did have some victories on Tuesday. There were some good things that happened in Wisconsin in particular, as far as hopefully getting more actual representatives who are going to work across the aisle and get things done for their constituents, which is what I still believe most Wisconsinites want to see. They want to see things get done. Mm-hmm. They want to see some cooperation from both sides of the aisle. And this was not a complete, you know, we got everything we wanted, but it's a start, Tanya, right? It's a start.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I completely agree with you, Jane. I think that at our core, Wisconsinites do want our elected officials to work together in a very, you know, pragmatic way. I'm from here, as you probably can tell from my accent, you know, and
what accent? And I don't know what you mean.
I don't hear an accent at all, Tanya.
Oh yeah. It's my ma. So I really do think at our core, people want that. And I think that we've had a lot of messages coming at us these last, I don't know how many years, that really do seek to divide us. And I think as humans, we have to figure out a way, which is hard sometimes. And from the elected official perspective, if we are going to secure reproductive rights, for example, they are gonna have to work across the aisle. We keep hearing about, put it on the ballot, right? Put it to the people. Well, in Wisconsin, we have to pass a piece of legislation through two consecutive legislative sessions before it can go on the ballot.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't know that. So we hear the rhetoric from politicians, we'll put it on the ballot. Well, in order to do that, it has to get through two legislative sessions. And that's the gold standard, is for the people of Wisconsin to say, yes, we want it in our constitution that we do indeed have bodily rights and autonomy.
But what you're saying is that's a long process. It's a long process. It's not like the next time when we go to the polls in
Correct.
April. In April,
in
we're
April.
Going
in My
April.
God.
I know we're going back to the polls in April yeah. again. That's not going to show up there. That could be a several year process to even get that on the ballot.
Yes. Yes.
And that's one of the things, Tanya, we were talking about before we went on the show, is that the buildup of momentum and getting things done at the local level and making sure you pay attention to those local races. Who is your alderman? Who is your county board supervisor, your state senator, your assembly person? Those are the people you need to be getting to know and talking to and voting for, because yes, the president and the senator, those are all the sexy races that the 24-hour news outlets are covering. But these individuals in Madison and in your little towns and small towns, whatever, you got to know who they are too and get involved.
Yeah, Greg, I couldn't agree more. And I would add to your list judges.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, who's running for judge is also critical. And if we think about books being banned, that's school, you know, our school board races, right? So so I agree, Greg, wholeheartedly. And that's where we have the most immediate impact on our lives, where we feel the policies at the local level.
There are still things we can all do.
Yes.
There are still things we can all watch. And there are still ways that we can support each other going forward. Tanya Atkinson with Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining us, Tanya. We will talk again, I'm sure.
Great. Sounds good. Thank you all so much.
Stay with us, Todd Alba. When we return, you're listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support WISS, the Valley's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
President Ronald Reagan said, "We're blessed with the opportunity to stand for something, for liberty and freedom and fairness. And these are things worth fighting for, worth devoting our lives to, and we have good reason to be hopeful and optimistic." Happy Veterans Day from Fun Pros. Fun Pros Event Planning Services has Wisconsin's best team building activities and the most innovative interactive games. For your next company meeting, holiday party, or family get together, call Fun Pros 920-886-3594.
Wisconsin Decides 2024, and this is the only place you received election results from across the state live.
And you're responding to our coverage.
I just want to thank you for being there for us.
Wisconsin is not people that are sore losers.
So no matter what happens, there will be a tomorrow, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Here for you after the election or any time.
Real news and great conversation on 98.3 WISS and the Civic Media app.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail, and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Jeannie from Eau Claire.
I am thankful for Civic Media, the on-air talent, the technicians, the producers, the news staff, and especially Mr. Sage Wild. It's a very, very sad, shocking day for me, yeah. But I still have hope because I have hope in you guys. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, bye. Jeannie. You give us hope. Appreciate you listening.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide coming to you from our studio at Radio Park here in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that used to be Twitter. After the 11 o'clock news, we're switching things around a little bit for this Thursday. Paul Noonan from the Acme Packing Company will be here to talk sports. Things are not necessarily going so well. And then we'll have Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot at 11:20, get a little forecast. And Joe Zepecki, political consultant, joining us at 11:30 to wrap up the hour. Right now, though, we are joined by our friend and colleague, Todd Alba, coming to us from our headquarters in Madison. And Todd, I got your show yesterday as I was driving from Madison back home, and I was so impressed with the story that you shared about your mother. And there's a lot of folks feeling very discouraged and very upset and lost. And I wanted you to come on and share what you shared yesterday, because I thought it was just so beautifully done.
Well, you're still very kind, Jane. I mean, it's very nice of you to say that. I appreciate it. I appreciate more the opportunity to share. Just my mom's going to go, I'm not that old. It's my grandma, but yes, it was.
Oh, your grandma. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mrs.
It's my mom's mother. It's mine.
Sorry about that.
No,
Mom Alba.
So, yeah, I mean, I think maybe I've talked a little bit about on your show. I've talked about my maternal grandmother, Marge Wallace, who passed away either 6-ish years ago at the age of 96, and she still had her mental faculties right up until the day that she died. She grew up in a small farm in southwest Wisconsin. I know we have called the caller from Blue River. That's where she was technically. The big unincorporated municipality of Blue River.
Blue River, Wisconsin.
Just below the Wisconsin River, where she was born. And my great-grandfather was a very talented carpenter. I still have a piece of furniture that he built, but was from the old school. I mean, his parents immigrated from what now we know as Czechoslovakia, but back then they called it Bohemia. And he didn't believe that women should go and get an education beyond eighth grade. So my grandmother left home at 13, moved into the larger municipality of Muscadet, which is about 1,000 people, and she rented an unheated attic and did the couple's laundry and cooked their meals for their kids at 13 so that she could finish high school. And then went on and got her bachelor's degree at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville by working her tail off. And then ended up starting out in a one-room schoolhouse at the same time working on a master's degree. And then ultimately became the president of, they called them county teachers colleges at the time in Wisconsin, is where people went to learn how to be a teacher. It was a two-year degree. And then she got her did her doctoral work at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So she was a graduate in the master's program at UW and then did her doctoral work. She ended up, long story short, being the first woman to be a dean in Wisconsin at a public university, as she helped create the University of Wisconsin-Richland, which unfortunately is now closed. And at that time, women could not even be on the Board of Regents, and they couldn't even be in the room other than the quote-unquote secretary taking the notes. And so she was a force of nature. She was a behemoth. She fit the stereotype. She was big-boned and loud.
Solid.
And
sturdy.
Stubborn like a mule. And if she believed in something, she could also be extraordinarily loving and compassionate and kind. But you did not want to get on the other side of what she thought was right. And she actually recruited at the time, I think it was late 60s, 70s, went to Milwaukee and recruited people of color to come to Richland Center because she said, we can give you a two-year associate degree, house you, and do it cheaper in Richland Center than you can in Milwaukee. And she got black people to come from Milwaukee to Richland Center to get their higher education at the time. And it also gave people Richland Center, which was 99.9% white, hey, we actually have an opportunity to have exposure and learn from people of different cultures and people of color. And but when she was doing this, getting it passed to have the two-year campus, she went down to the Board of Regents meeting in Madison, and she stood outside the door, and she looked at these people, and this is one of her, this is how she talked. She said, I have got to get into that meeting. And the guys in the room, the Board of Regents, they hear her voice, and they'd say, is that Marge Wallace?
Oh, no. Yep.
Well, send her in.
Ah!
And she literally, not by physical force, but just by pure sheer
will.
Determination, will, that's a good word, forced herself into this room and got them to approve the campus at Richland Center. And thus is how it began. And I thought of her and how much you would have wanted a woman to be president, I'm sure, because I know when Hillary ran, she was like, wouldn't it just be something if she got elected? And so I'm pretty confident in saying she would have wanted Vice President Harris to win. But I also know that if when it didn't happen, she would have looked me in the eyes and said, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yep.
And to not give up. And I think that's the message for everyone, is not give up. Jimmy Valvano in that great speech, dying of cancer, never give up. Never, ever give up.
Yes. Yes.
What a powerhouse she was. What a remarkable role model she was. And an inspiration, I think, for all of us. Yeah. We can all take something away from that. Look at the odds that she had to overcome. Did that completely fracture her relationship with her father?
No. In fact, when she became president of the teachers' college, he drove up there. She went and got him and took her to her office about 20 miles away off the farm. And he was not a man of emotion. And he cried. And he said, well, Margie, I was wrong.
There you go.
Seamen, you can do it.
There you go. Thank you so much for sharing that, Todd. For folks who are listening, I encourage you to go back and listen to Todd's show from yesterday. You will find it at civicmedia.us. Just click on all shows. Todd Allbach, catch him today coming up at noon. Thank you so very much, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
Stay with us. News is next. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Is Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we continue to analyze the election that was and look ahead to the weekend. Get our minds off of things. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support. WISS 1100 AM Berlin. W252 DR Oshkosh. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.